All right, thanks everybody for coming and being a part of ASP Comp, which is a great virtual conference. Hope some of you were in my session yesterday about single page applications and have come back to kind of walk through some of the HTML5 stuff that I'm going to talk about from a mobile perspective here. For those of you who don't know, this is Chris Love. I'm an ASP MVP. I've been doing development probably for about 20 years now. Pretty much dominated all about web. Got into the web really early. So it's kind of my passion. I've been blogging for, I guess, about 6 or 7 years now at professionalaspnet.com, and you can follow me on Twitter at Chris Love. And I like to share a lot of resources related to development, mobile stuff, business, and talking about baseball and college football too. So anyway, please follow me if you want to. I'd love to have you on my stream there. So today I'm going to talk about what I call going native in HTML5, and what I want to cover is things to A, get you thinking, as well as just kind of prove that you can do a lot of things with the just the standard HTML5, CSS, and some Ajax sprinkled in that you can do with native applications. So we hear all the time that native is so much better than doing the web. And I started focusing primarily on mobile about 2 years ago. And I went into it with the attitude of, okay, I'm gonna have to learn how to do native or effectively mobile desktop applications, if you will. And I just kept looking at things and I'm going, I just don't really see the reason why I have to do this in native. Why can't I just do this as a web page? And that way I can hit all the devices. And I don't have to go through the censorship, if you will, of the application stores and then giving them 30% of my revenue on top of that. So the freedom of doing things as a web application really started appealing to me. And the other thing is, not a lot of people really proved to me that native was really that much better than doing it on the web. I have 9 mobile devices now. I try out applications on iOS, Android, Windows Phone, and I've yet to really see that many applications that really impress me as a native application. I just can't see architecturally how to do as a web application. Granted, there's some hardware access issues that eventually will rectify itself. If you want to go look up the Mozilla Web API project, I know we just had a presentation on the web API, but this is a different kind of web API. Mozilla's created a project called Web API where they're doing a browser, and it's a mobile browser, but it maps all of the hardware device APIs into the browser, which, in my opinion, is what it should be. If you aren't aware, with Windows 8 Metro, the WinJS, it's actually using IE10, basically in a little shell. And they're just mapping in the hardware access is one of the big differences there. It's the same IE10 engine that you're going to get with Windows 8 that's running in those WinJS applications. So Microsoft's like really close to making that happen. So some of the applications that I've looked at over the times that I kind of reference to a lot are, like on the iPad in particular, there's some apps that really caught my attention. Flipboard is probably the most popular one. I like a lot of the things in AOL Editions, USA Today, the LinkedIn application, which is actually an HTML5 application in a like a PhoneGap type wrapper. There's a bunch of, in fact, another thing that I found out along the way is the vast majority of non-game apps that are native apps are actually HTML5 applications wrapped in something like PhoneGap or AppCelerator. And that's another thing that kind of just really sunk into me. What's really going on out there. And as we're seeing a lot of games too, talking about games, a lot more and more games are becoming HTML5. It's not necessarily the easiest thing to do. There's just not a lot of frameworks out there that are very mature, I would say, and I think that's one of the stumbling blocks people come into. And the same goes for creating a line of business or regular applications as well with the web stuff. On Windows Phone, there's some applications that have caught my attention: Foursquare, IMDb, and Kayak. I'll show you some screenshots of some of these as we go through. There's a lot more. I'm a big Metro fan, as I as I play with all three platforms, Metro just stands out so much better than the iOS recommendations and Android and so forth. So you're going to see a lot of Metro influence in what I'm going to show you today. So again, I'm just going to show you some of these screenshots, some of these apps. So if you aren't familiar with Foursquare for Windows Phone, it's not only beautiful application, but it's the information architecture in it is fantastic. I blogged maybe about 5-6 weeks ago comparing it to, say, 4th and Mayor, the iPhone native application, the Android native application, and just how much better it is, in my opinion, how much faster it is, how so much easier to check in. I routinely beat everybody when I get together with friends checking in by a long shot. In fact, sometimes I'll bring up the iPhone and the Windows Phone and race to see which one I can check in faster, and I've yet to even have the iPhone come close. So anyway, you can see over here on the right the Kayak application. It's really hard for me to do a screenshot of some of the stuff in the Kayak I really like. I like their page transitions. They're doing like a rotation off a pivot, like a pivot rotation, like you're spinning something like a postcard rack or something in a gift store or something like that kind of thing. And I really like that. Plus Kayak's got their little Kayak symbol thing with a little airport ticker things. And here's some other screenshots of applications. I've got hundreds and hundreds of application screenshots, but just showing things. Some of them are web, like the Target site over there. That's actually a mobile website that's done really, really well. I'm really impressed by what they did with that. Over on the far right is Flipboard for iPhone, and then there's the Fandango application on Windows Phone, and the All Things D app and stuff on iPhone there. Here's some iPad applications. I just kind of threw in some screenshots here. Major League Baseball down the bottom right. I think that's the Walmart shopping site or something up there in the top. Zappos over on the left. The Weather Channel. And I'm looking at all these layouts, and I just don't see anything that you can't do with HTML5, CSS3, and stuff at this point. So we hear over and over, we can't do stuff with the capital T there. I just noticed that after a year. People just keep telling us we can't do stuff, and at this point I just tell them, you know, whatever. I'm going to go do what I want to do. I'm going to enjoy the freedom that I know I have, and I'm going to be able to control my marketing, control my revenue streams, and control my user experience. And I'm going to have a consistent user experience across all the platforms, and I'm going to be able to reach all those platforms. And I don't have to have a deep knowledge of how to build iOS applications. I don't have to have a deep knowledge of Android. I don't have to have a deep knowledge of Windows Phone, BlackBerry, if you still are worried about that, and so forth. I can target a different standard and produce pretty much the same experiences. So with that, I want to go ahead and kind of move over to more of the demonstration part of this, which is pretty much the entire presentation. So what I'm going to show you here, just show you some of the stuff on my iPhone. And if you're wondering, I have fixed my iPhone and made it Metro. There we go. And let's just scroll this over. There's a little bit of frame rate latency going on here. But I'm going to launch my little mobile movie web application that I walked through yesterday in the single page application session. And I've noticed in the iPhone the last day or two it's gotten rather slow on the load, and I'm trying to figure out why. Usually it's a lot snappier than that. But I want you to notice a couple of things. Now, I came from a Metro theme that I added to the iPhone, and so it had the little icon there. I'll show you how to actually get a real icon here in a second. But this is a web application, but we don't have any browser Chrome. And a lot of people don't realize you can run your web applications on iPhone and iPad without the browser Chrome. And it's actually fairly easy to execute that. So let's go look at some code. I want to show you how we actually do that. So this is the actual site, the code for the site that we're looking at. And what we've done here is we've added some meta tags that are specific to the Safari on the iPhone. And in particular, we're looking at the Apple Mobile Web App Capable tag, and we're saying that's yes. And then there's another one where we can kind of style the status bar, and I think by default it's black, and I think I set it black. I think you have the choice of gray, black, or transparent off the top of my head. I just always set it to black. It always works out a little better. So that's what I stick with. And what that does is that tells Apple when you launch it from the home screen that not to not show the browser Chrome at all. And you still get pretty much the same stuff. There's a couple of things that they do a little different for security, and I'm not totally sure why. I haven't had it affect anything so far. Anyway, it gives you the ability to show these things as native type applications without that browser Chrome getting in the way. So you get a little more screen real estate. Now let's go look at this on the desktop. There we go. I want to pan over here. Oh, that's the Metrium coming through. Sorry, guys. There we go. This whole screen is all web applications that I've been working on over the last year, some of them here. And what you want to notice is that they all have regular icons that are exactly the same as, if it'll pan over, my iPhone is really not cooperating today, that look like native application icons here. And if we launch those from here, let's see, here we go. It's the same exact thing I just did from the Metrium desktop there. So it's launching my mobile movie application. There we go. And there you go. And we're there. Now, how we did that, if you're familiar with favicon, which I imagine most of you are if you're web developers, the natural progression is to do something a little better. Favicon's been around for a long time, and it's kind of getting long in the tooth. And as screen resolutions get higher and higher, having just a simple old-fashioned icon file is just not going to suffice. Typically right now with the favicon, you're going to create a 16-bit and a 32-bit image of your icon to be able to be used, and the operating system will determine which one it's going to leverage. But if you look at the Apple Touch icons, these are all, again, Apple-specific meta tags. And what they are is designating the link to the icon to use. And we've got different resolutions here. And this is basically to handle iPhone 3, 4, 5, so forth. As the screen resolutions get better on the devices, you can provide a better, higher resolution icon that'll show up nicer. Another thing that's very important here too, if you don't do this pre-composed here, Apple will automatically place over like the little jelly gloss kind of thing on top of your icon. So if you don't want to have that happen, you need to include what's called a pre-composed icon, and therefore it'll just leave it alone for you. So if we go back to my screen here, all these are pre-composed. And so that's why you only see the glossy shading on the ones that I want. Now, the ones that have the little stars, what I've done is I'm using the HTML5 mobile boilerplate. If you're familiar with HTML5 boilerplate, they have a mobile version of that as well. And it has placeholder icons for each one of these, and the star icon is the one that comes from that particular project. And as I actually get to the point of kind of finishing an application, that's when I start actually creating a customized icon for it. So that's why you see all the stars on there. They don't all represent the same application. So, okay, another thing that's really important about a website is you need to tell the browser how to actually render the page. And so one of the things that you kind of have to be aware of is that the screen real estate is obviously different on a phone. It's also different on a tablet, and there's all kinds and shapes of tablets. For example, the Nexus 7 is a 7-inch tablet. The iPad is a 10-inch tablet. I think the Surface is a little bit larger than the iPad. The Samsung 7 that they gave out at Build last year is a wide tablet. I have a Motorola Zoom, which is a it's not a 4x3 like the iPad. It's I think 9x12 or whatever. I forget how the resolutions work, but anyway, you get the idea. And what you're telling it here is that this website is designed or built to work on mobile platforms. And in particular, these two right here are for kind of backwards compatibility. The handheld friendly is more towards the, the thing Hewlett-Packard bought. Anyway, The Palm Pilots, believe it or not, that's kind of a legacy one. And then the Mobile Optimized was for Windows Mobile, and that's also kind of obviously fallen away, so you don't really have to worry about that too much anymore. But the viewport tag is supported by all the mobile browsers, for all the smartphone platforms, and it's pretty universal in the way it works. And you know, there's several parameters you can pass to it. I find the most common ones that I stick with are the width and the initial scale, which you're seeing here. And so I want to set the initial scale to 1, so it's a 1-to-1 representation of the actual content on the page. And I want to tell it that I want the width of the page to be the width of the device. So for a typical portrait smartphone, you're looking at 380 pixels wide. And then, of course, if it's rotated in landscape mode, it's 420 pixels wide. And so what happens is the phone automatically adjusts for that, and you're able to make it work just right. Open up this other one here. So if you don't do that, and here's the thing, there's I think I saw a stat that said something like there's 700 million desktop websites out there at this point. I'm just see if I can confirm that real quick. But I believe it was 700 million. Yeah, 700 million desktop websites. But a lot of times I'm seeing like the surveys about mobile applications are in the 300 to 400, possibly even half a million kind of range, 300,000 to 400,000, somewhere in that range, which is minuscule. And if you think about all the native apps that are in the different app stores, even those numbers, even though they tout them as being really large, compared to 700 million, that's still really tiny. So that means there's this huge opportunity out there for us to begin with to go back and kind of retrofit all these legacy sites to make them mobile. And the problem is most of those sites are designed for 800 by 600, a 960 pixel widescreen, or are designed to work with really wide screens or even smaller, you know, really tiny screens. I still see designers putting together what I called recipe card sites that are really tiny with tiny fonts and things like that. I still see a few of those floating around. But those aren't going to render quite right on a phone. If you've got a smartphone, you're familiar with this. The sites render, and the whole page will render in the viewport. In other words, what the user can actually see. And so it goes off the width. So if you've got a 960 pixel width site, you're going to get rendered as if it's on the desktop, and the fonts are going to be really tiny. The user is going to have to pinch, zoom, pan around. And a pinch, zoom, pan around thing is fine when you're floating around a Google map or something. It's not fine when you're trying to read content on your site or trying to get to stuff on your site. Just having links not designed to be touched is a big part, and being not having to pinch, zoom, pinch, zoom, pinch, zoom to get down to the link is rather annoying experience for users. So you want to try to make your website ensure that it's going to fit inside the viewable area. So if we look at this particular site here, this is a little demo site that I put together for this presentation. It's viewable in here. If I didn't have that viewport thing, it could possibly render really wide, everything would be shrunk down. I don't really want that experience. So leveraging the viewport is very important. And like I said, it's not a whole lot you have to do here. You can set the device height, but I've found that causes little problems. You can do max scale, max out, kind of a min scale, things like that. But generally, you don't want your users scaling your web applications. As you start kind of see, I think you'll understand why as you start seeing some of the things I'm going to show you. They're very dependent on touch and moving things around and stuff like that. And if you've got the ability to pan and zoom as the default actions on the browser, then you're going to run into issues with your application kind of functioning correctly. So another thing, let me go back to the touch icon. I almost forgot about this. For Windows 8, and I'm going to assume this is going to be the same for Windows Phone 8 that's coming out, since everything they've said is that the IE10 will be the same on Windows Phone as it is on the desktop. That's not necessarily true about IE9, so just be aware of that. For example, Windows Phone doesn't support touch right now, which is one of the reasons why a lot of things don't work quite as well. But with the Apple Touch icons, there's a very similar thing in IE10. And that's called this MS application tile image, and then the tile color. And if you've heard of pen sites, which I'm not sure a lot of people have actually done anything with pen sites, But they really are, the natural progression of those is into live tiles. And Microsoft hasn't given us first-class citizenship yet as a live tile, even though it could totally be done. They're getting close. And if you want to look, there is a blog on the IE team blog here. And I'm sorry I don't have a bit.ly for you, but I just usually look up IE10 IE team blog and go to here and I'll find this. But these are some examples on Windows 8 of showing the one on the left here is a fav icon. If you don't specify this tile image and even the tile color, the color obviously sets the color of it behind it, it's going to pick up on the fav icon. If it doesn't have a fav icon, it's just going to give you a default icon. And so you don't really get the nice quality there. Now, if you've got the icon for it, you can actually create a nice looking icon here. Now they've just got the picture of Ben the PC guy or whatever, the guy who's going around doing all the speed test pictured here. But you could actually put anything you want. So if you wanted to put a more metro looking kind of icon there, you're absolutely open to do that, and you can set the background color. And so you can have the regular square icon. And another thing, if you notice down here, they've got the tweets at 8, and that's because it's basically leveraging the pin site technology. And so you can actually hook it up, and I guess I don't really have the full code there or anything, but you can actually hook it up just like you can a pin site. Like I've got Facebook down here at the bottom, and if you right click on that, it's got all the stuff here, and they'll leverage the similar type stuff there to give you the ability to put some content here. So that's pretty cool that you can do that on Windows 8, on the upcoming Windows 8 platform. So with that, I'm going to stop real quick. I don't see any new questions. If you've got questions, feel free to type them in here in the Q&A thing, and I'll stop every now and then and see if I can't answer them for you. Okay. Think I really have anything particular here. What I do want to show you, let's go look at this one because it's a little cleaner. And let's go back here. Come on, there we go. Okay, so like I showed you this, and everything's kind of placed in here in the nice view state, but users will rotate their phones, and I can't rotate. Can I rotate this? I think I can. Let me see. Yeah, rotate. I went to the right. There we go. Now we're matched up with the way the phone actually looks. You notice that it just kind of flowed naturally with that. Obviously, I don't have enough tiles to fill in down here on the bottom right, but that's just the way the content actually is shaped up. And everything just kind of spread out the way it was supposed to. Let's rotate left. I guess I can do Control left, Control right. And it just flowed naturally. And that's because I'm using kind of what's called a fluid layout, and that's done with absolute positioning. And this is one of those things I struggled with mightily last year. I'm trying to figure out how to do this, and I don't know why I didn't see this because it was right in front of my face, and it just never gelled with me. But I was at the MVP Summit, and Steve Sanderson, the guy who wrote Knockout, was doing a presentation on doing kind of mobile-centric type stuff, and he pointed this out, and I just went, slapped my forehead, going, "Duh." So let's go look at what's going on. It's really CSS going on here, and I'm going to. Do I have this up there? No, let's go pull up the right one here. There we go. Well, I thought I pulled that one up. There we go. Okay, so this is Chrome, and let's go look at the layout here. And first things first is I've got. Let's see, where is it? The header. Here we go. I'm using absolute positioning, and so I've got this header up here. If you look over here on the browser, you can see it highlighted there. It's giving you the actual dimensions. Now, if I expand this out, let's just do this, and I go back over here to the header. You can see that the width is now 617, whereas before we can go down more to that. And now it is 299, for example. And the reason why that just naturally stretched for us, and if I go up and down, it stays fixed for me, is because of the way this absolute positioning works. So here, and this is the thing that kind of probably tripped me up and kept me from going this route. All my life I've been taught how to do XY coordinates for graphics, and they all started in origin and spread out, and that you do the XY based on that. So if you click a mouse on the screen, it gives you the XY coordinate from the top left. Or if you touch the screen, the same difference. And so I kept thinking with the top, it would be hard to actually calculate where the top and the bottom and all that stuff was. But with absolute positioning, it's actually assumed to be zero, say for the top, at the very top of the screen, and as the number gets larger, it moves it down. So if I move this, let's just move it down 60, you can see it basically disappeared on me, and it's back there somewhere. If I move it back up, actually, let's move the other one down so you can see that. There we go. So you can kind of see it peaking back there. And the reason is because the z it starts at zero and goes down. And for the left and the right, the same thing holds true. So if I make it, say, 20 over here, it's going to move it off to the left. And if I do 20 over here, it moves it in from the right. So it's kind of a nice way to set up margins to keep this stuff consistent. Because you're telling it to fix on those particular coordinates, it's going to stick to those things, and the width and the height, they're just naturally going to flow with it. So this is why they call it a fluid layout, because it just kind of flows with what you're doing. And so as you go, you can go position just about anything on the screen and have this. So if you do your core layout and you use this absolute positioning, everything will just kind of naturally flow within the bounds of your stuff. So again, I'm using absolute positioning for the main content area. And obviously I set the to the top down a little bit, but again, right and left are zero. This time the bottom is zero. Now for the header, the reason why the height stays the same is because I have set the height, but I didn't set the bottom on here. And the reason is because if I go, even on a phone, if I rotate the phone, that bottom's going to change. So I really don't know where that bottom's going to change to. So I don't want to say it's, 350 pixels from the bottom or something like that, because that 350 could easily turn into 290 on a rotate or something like that. And so we don't want to do that. But if you just set the height in this case, it'll make it a fixed height. Let's go restore our position here. It's going to drive me nuts. Or I could just refresh. There we go. Okay. And here's my div main, which I'm not seeing. Oh, that's my home view. Okay, good. And again, put the top up here, right, left, bottom. I chose 61 pixels here just to give it a little bit of space, so I had a little bar going across there. And down here at the bottom is my footer. And we'll come back to what's going on inside the footer here in a little bit. But again, I'm using absolute positioning. And I'm telling it the bottom is zero, left and right, to the side. And then I'm telling it how tall to actually make it. So it's the same as the header, just in reverse. Okay, and I'm also making it higher, but that's because I made it into a toolbar, and we'll talk about that here in a minute. So the nice thing is, no matter what your screen resolutions are, and this is a very big deal when it comes to Android, because there are just hundreds and hundreds of screen resolutions out there for Android. You don't have to worry about it, and so you got a nice fluid layout going on and everything. Now you need to put some content in here. And one of the first things I want to talk about, like I said, I want to go to the toolbar thing, is this toolbar. Now, on Windows Phone, the toolbar has a little ellipsis, makes it bounce up. And if we touch up here, it should go down. And there we go. And so we've got the toolbar effects. Pretty much across the board, every platform has some sort of toolbar or app bar type of metaphor. So this is why this is kind of important, is to do this, to have something available to you like this. And I struggled with this one last summer quite a bit, and the absolute positioning really helped me fix a lot of problems I was having with it. And my original approach was very similar to the way the jQuery mobile team was doing their headers and footers mechanism. And they were actually going through in JavaScript and trying to keep it placed on the screen correctly, and worry about fixed positioning. That seems to be the natural approach. But when I figured out the absolute positioning stuff back in the winter, I just I went back and revisited this, and it was so much easier to do the toolbar effect with absolute positioning. So the way this works, this is actually a jQuery plugin that starts applying it, but there's a lot of CSS involved with this as well. So again, I've got the height here, and the reason why it's set inline now is because the toolbar has been the plugin has actually been applied on the click event. And then I've got this the top menu, which is a collection of spans. And the reason why I want to use spans here is I want them to line up next to each other. I could just as easily done an unordered list and set the list items to display inline, and that would have done the same effect. And for this particular thing, I've found that spans tend to work a little easier though. And basically, I've got the image here and such, and that's all I'm doing. I could also reference a data URI, a CSS sprite, that sort of thing, and be a little more efficient probably with my application as well. And then the last one here is actually placed in, I think, by the plugin itself, and that's the ellipsis. And that's there's some logic that's going on the toolbar. I can't remember if this particular version of it's up to date, that actually determines if the ellipsis needs to be displayed or not. So if I don't have any child items, for example, I don't show the ellipsis, unless I want to like make it bounce up so you can see the text underneath those icons, those kind of things. And then below it, if I hit the ellipsis, it's going to expand and it's going to give us what I call the submenu. And this is one thing that seems to be very unique to the Windows Phone metaphor. Now, there are some applications I've seen on iOS and Android that do something sort of similar to this, and I think it's called a tray effect. And I think the Target website or native app one, coming off the top of my head, has this effect in it, where it's basically something you kind of pull up, and it'll have those navigational pieces there. Again, this is just a list of things. In this case, it is a an unordered list that's just a vertical list, and we're applying some styles to it to make it show up there. One of the things I haven't put in place yet that I've noticed on some of the Windows Phone applications is as the tool this rises and falls, these items will kind of float in from the bottom right corner and fill in naturally. It's kind of a nice little ooh-ah effect. To do that, I have to do like a CSS WebKit, or not WebKit, but a keyframe animation or transitions to put that in place so that the things could actually flow in. But I haven't had time to sit down and kind of figure out how to do the math to make them go to the right position, so to speak. So that's one of my to-do things. Okay, so let's go look at the plugin real quick. And let's go look at the newer version, just for the fun of it. This did this to me yesterday. All right. I think with live meeting running, I lose my control MO, which is to shrink all the stuff, collapse everything down. Okay, so if you're familiar with jQuery plugins, this is the basic plugin pattern here, where I'm going and making sure I've got something in my select in my jQuery object to actually apply these things to. I'm passing in some settings to actually set up the app bar, and I'm gonna walk through. Let's go do yeah. That's top level items, second level items, good enough. Okay, this is on the search page of my little mobile movie site there, and I'm passing in a couple of arrays here, one's for the top level navigation, one's for the second level, and I'm setting the title, what icon needs to be displayed, a little CSS hook kind of class that I need to go to, and what function or action needs to be executed when a user touches it or clicks on it or whatever, and that's going to get fired off there. And this is just going to go get passed into my plugin. And so the plugin's going to go do that. It's going to merge it with some default settings, which are these down here at the bottom. As you can see, these are the two arrays that I'm basically replacing. And then I've got some fixed parameters here that I could just as easily replace to define the style of my toolbar. And so what we're going to go through and do is make sure that the two menus are empty, and then it's got some logic in there to kind of determine if it needs to hide some stuff. And then we're going to go through and we're going to place all the top level items, and eventually I may replace this with a like a jQuery template or something, but right now I've got it fixed in there. And then I actually wrote another library for touch, and it combines touch and mouse events into a tap function. Just a little side note, one of the things about supporting the click event in websites is that click on a touch device is slower than the touch by necessity, because it's trying to process touch events before it processes any mouse event handlers, because touch is a priority on a touch device, except on Windows Phone. And so instead, my little tap function hooks into the touch start and mouse down events, for example, and actually kind of calculates it off those to determine if the item was just tapped, was double tapped, or like a long press type of an event, or things like that. And so that's why I kind of wrapped it up. So I'm not going to go through that function. I just want to explain what's going on there. And then here, if doing the applying the toolbar expand concept here, if it needs to be done, telling it to, let's see, that's for each item, yeah. So it's going to, at this point, it's going to collapse the toolbar because now it's doing whatever it needs to do. When the plugin's applied and the ellipsis is hit, then I'm applying a tap event to the whole body of the web page. And because if you touch somewhere else, so if we, for example, I open it up and I hit up here, I just want the toolbar to go back down. And that's effectively what's going on. So I'm just unapplying that event handler to the body so that I can go back to normal operations at that point. And here is a little jQuery magic, or not jQuery, but JavaScript going on here that I think a lot of new JavaScript people probably aren't familiar with. And instead of doing v.action and just passing in a parameter, I'm using the JavaScript call method to actually call that action. And that's very important because here I can actually specify what the this is going to be inside that call action. So in this case, I want to actually, let's see where I'm getting the that set up here. It's going to be up here. Maybe. Let's see. There we go. Oh. Well, somewhere in here it's getting set so that it knows which item was actually hit and things like that. So it could be that could be the application object that you're driving, that kind of thing. I think that's what I set it up to be. Okay. Anyway, so the second level items, very similar. Here's where the ellipsis actually gets placed on there. It could, let's see, and then we've got the toolbar for the, let's see, if we have an ellipsis, then show the ellipsis, otherwise, don't. And also does some math to kind of place the things around a little more level, I guess. And then here's where it puts the second level stuff in there. So it's nothing too fancy, but it does work pretty nicely. Still kind of a work in progress as well. So just for the record, there is, it's not this one. We'll get to that in a second. There's a site, and I've totally forgotten about it. But he's got a site with his own toolbar implementation. It's got some similarities to it. Again, I didn't set up a bit.ly to it, but it's drewgreenwell.com, and he's got a couple of things on here. He's also got a Live Tiles plugin. Let's go look at that real quick. I've been working on a Live Tile thing myself, but I was kind of going to redo it quite a bit, and so I decided not to walk through it this time. But he's got a pretty good example of doing live tiles is HTML5 here, and he's got a bunch of different things going on to kind of reflect the different kind of live tile effects you get with Metro. And so he just set that up. He's got the code here. He just set that up with all just straight HTML and some CSS. He's got a ton of different options on here. So most likely, I probably won't pursue the rest of my live tile thing. I had forgotten he had done this. And if you want to look at his application bar, again, he's doing something very similar to what I'm accomplishing as well. He's got quite a few parameters you can set in there as well. So we're probably very similar to each other. So anyway, while we're on the topic of live tiles, here's another one at DevCurry. They've got a live tile implementation. I don't think it's quite as complete as the one I just showed you, but he does have a lot of example code here for it. So if we go look at the live demo, here we go. Obviously, he's using Azure. Let's see if it actually does. See, he's got some things going on. I don't think it's quite as mature as the other one. So anyway, so for the record, there we go. Now, let's go look at some other things here. First, let's go check. I got some questions. Excellent. Okay. Rational 5 foam, do these still need to be set up? No, absolutely not. You are free to host it wherever you want to. You do not have to submit web applications to any app store. It's just a regular web URL that you provide to people. There are actually HTML5 web application app stores out there. For example, Facebook's got one set up for Facebook HTML5 applications. Let's see, I'm trying to think of Ziwi, which I've been having problems with getting that application, their site to actually work, is another one that I've come across. I've seen a few others along the way. There's one on my iPad that you can submit to. Anyway, I will look at this question while I'm trying to look up that. Let's see. So if iPhone apps don't typically have a WinApp bar, won't Windows file feel too different? You know, so I hear this question a lot, or see this pointed out, you have to look like the platform you're on. And, you know, Kendo UI does a great job of adapting to those. One of the other markets I found is Open App Market. Open App MKT is what's on my iPad here. I haven't gone to it in a little while, though. But anyway, so back to the whole, doesn't have to look like the actual platform. So here's the thing. Most of the iPhone apps that people actually use don't follow the iOS guidelines, like Flipboard. If Flipboard followed the iOS guidelines, it'd just be a gradient list of titles of news articles, and no one would really probably care about it. And I really don't see a lot of apps that people actually use that really do follow along those lines. Now, I see a lot of variations in those toolbars and stuff, and quite honestly, companies, when they produce their applications, they need to brand themselves and not worry about branding a particular platform. I kind of think about it sometimes as like 10 years ago when I was doing a lot with small businesses. So many of these mom and pop owners would insist on having an email address at AOL instead of actually at their domain. And that's effectively what you're doing. You're giving up your own brand identity by doing that. But you do hear that people want to have the same exact effects, and I really don't buy that, since most of the apps that people I see people using don't follow those guidelines. Now, for as far as the toolbar, you can tweak the styles and stuff to do whatever you want to with it. I tend to like the Metro. I just play with them too much, and I just feel like Metro is the better of the three type of styles right now. So anyway, that's a nice philosophical question. My answer to you on that one is, if you really think you need to have it look like the actual platform, go ahead and do it. You can definitely set up styles for all three platforms. Like I said, Kendo UI does it, and you can absolutely do that if you want to. To me, it just adds more pain to it, and you are going to be you're more worried about branding another platform rather than your own business. So, okay, those were good questions. Okay. Another thing that I really, really like about Metro is this panorama effect. And let's go back over here just to point this out. These are some examples of panoramas. And what you got to think about is, the panorama is a way to add more content to your application while working within the viewport that the user actually has. And I saw a decent analogy to that, kind of as to the way a person that's used to doing magazine layouts might use something like a panorama control to add more value, more richness to the experience. And that's one thing that I definitely feel going from Windows Phone applications to their analogs on Android and iPhone is this panorama control really gives me a much more intimate or much richer experience with that particular application. Another thing I like about the app bar, or the panorama, is that it's very natural for your thumb to be able to swipe things left and right, because usually you hold your phone in your hand, in one hand, and you use your thumb for your primary tool to actually interact with an application. And if you think about it, your thumb goes in this arc from right to left if you're holding your left hand, or right, left to right if you're holding it in the right hand. And so you got this natural swiping built into it. Now, if you're going up and down, that's a little more unnatural, in my opinion. So that's why I really like this panorama effect quite a bit. Now, if we go back over here, I want to show it on the iPhone first because, let's face it, the browser's just not going to cut it. And let's do the movie. Just for the fun of it, let's do this too. I got my Android set up over here. Nope, that's not what I wanted. That's what I wanted. So this is my Android. And if I go back up here to the top, we'll reload that while we go over here. So this is the same exact application across platforms. Now notice on the Android I don't get the, like, I have still have to deal with the browser Chrome. And I'm looking into possible ways to fix that on some of the newer Androids. There's a full screen API that it supports, but I haven't done enough testing with that to give you any information or examples yet. So with the thing, and you see there's some latency between my phone and what you're actually seeing on the screen, I'm just panning back and forth across my content here. There we go. Come on. I've got one bug in this right now. That's okay. I keep tweaking this panorama. My latest adventure is I'm trying to make it leverage the transitions and stuff. See the 3D transitions and stuff where they're available and fallbacks and stuff like that. So I'm actually got a little bug in there right now, I think, with that. But the same effect works on the Android as well. You're seeing a little tear there, but because they support touch, I'm able to swipe through if I can get the thing to actually respond. There it goes. Okay. So with that, I'm not going to go into the code because I've actually done full presentations on this panorama control before. What's going on is, let's actually go look at the code. I think that's going to be the better way to do this. It's a little sleight of hand going on with this. And tile view, feedback view, drawer, somewhere in here. Where's the home view? Let's see. Okay, here we go. Sometimes I get lost in nested HTML here. Okay, what I've got is I've got a container that is wrapping around the content of this panorama. And inside of that is a horizontal unordered list. And like I said before, you could do list items and you just set the display to inline block. In this case, it's inline. And they'll show horizontal instead of vertical. But you also have to take care to set the width. And so the width is set to 284 pixels because that's the rotation here on the phone. Now if I resize this, I believe it changes with it. Yes. And that's because the panorama plugin that I've got actually hooks into the resize event of the application or the browser, and the orientation change event as well. And so what it does is it recalculates what the size of each one of these panels needs to be with the minimum size and things like that. And so each one of these list items, and then for this one I've got three. So I've got the tiles here, which is kind of similar to what's on the Foursquare application for Windows Phone or the Yelp application and a few other apps that are out there. And then I've got a list here of information, and as it moves through, it's a continuous thing going on. So it's kind of borrowed from scrollers, and I actually started building this from a project on Core Drops. I think it's how you pronounce it. CoreDrops.timpanis.com. I got all kinds of fantastic tutorials up there, and one of them was a parallax scroller. And so originally the way I had this set up was the background. I had three backgrounds and they were all moving kind of asynchronously with each other. One would move at speed X and the other one would move speed Y and speed Z, things like that. And that's actually a pretty cool effect. That's something that the IMDb Windows Phone app does, is has this little background thing going in there. And I've got some code in there to move the background kind of asynchronously with the content, so there's this kind of cool 3D kind of effect going on. I don't use it that much though. So each one of those things is moving around the page, and if I scroll through here, you should see things changing over here. And in all honesty, there's actually only two list items here. This one's actually a double wide, and I know it's not a trailer, but it is a double wide one. And I've got the same effect going on in the movie tiles. Let me just go in the movie application. Let's go look at that one too. I've got more panels over here. So you've got one, two, three, and then one more double wide. So I've got four panels in this particular one. And this will actually work on a two-panel one. It's a little jumpy going from one to the other, but it's not that bad. Eventually I may fix it so it's nicer. Okay, so let's stick this up here. So there's one panel, there's the second panel, there's the third panel, and the fourth panel. And of course this one's double wide. So pay attention to what's going on here. And let's go look at that. That's going to be the bullet movie. So if I move this one, now the bullet movies is here. Now there's a new one above it that's actually off the screen. So what's going on is I've got each of these panels, which are list items, and as I scroll to the right, I'll remove it, but I'll save it as a jQuery variable, and then I'll append it at the front of the list. And if I go to the left, I do just the opposite. I take the one that was off the screen and is far off, now is two panels off to the left, I'll remove it from the list, and then I'll inject it at the end of the list, so that I've always got one kind of dangling off each side so that it can smoothly transition into it. Now, how this is done, if you look up here, this is -297 and this is 297 pixels wide. So it's constantly calculating how far off the screen it needs to do it. And so when it moves, so if we watch it one more time, look at the numbers change up there like a little tally board. You can see them moving around and it finally settles in. And so there's like this quick instantaneous swap of everything that happens, and it's nice and fast, so it's pretty cool. But it's just some basic CSS trickery with some JavaScript thrown in to kind of manage the process. And so as we move these things back and forth, it's all off there. Now, let's look at maybe some of these styles here. So we've got the width is fixed to hold each of these elements. And I don't have to do any like overflow hiddens or anything like that, because that's automatically handled by the container here. The container should have the overflow hidden. There it is. And we've got a fixed height on that and everything else. And here's the width, and that's set by the plugin. So that way it actually has the right width. Now, if you're familiar, there's a little, the panorama control usually does a little gutter over here to kind of tease you with the content on the next panel. So that's why this is 332 pixels, but each of the panels is only 297 pixels in this case. So I've got like a 35 pixel gutter kind of thing going on. Another thing to notice, this is my laptop, and I don't have touch on here, so I've put what I call the little wings on here to actually go backward and forward. That's just that checks to actually see if touch is enabled or not. If touch isn't enabled, then it gives you the wings. Otherwise, those aren't ever displayed. So, all right, let's go. No questions? Excellent. All right. Let's go look at this list in particular. And I want to show you what's going on here. This is pretty cool. Notice how I'm just kind of scrolling that naturally. It doesn't cause the whole page to move up and down. And this is pretty important, because you want to be able to let your users scroll content vertically, but you don't want to affect the position of things on your screen a lot of times. Even on the phones and tablets, you don't want to have the whole thing scrolling up and down. It also helps you keep your brand awareness and things like that going on. And I'm doing this with a little utility called iScroll. And there are several other utilities out there I highly recommend. I'm going to show you another one here in a minute, actually two. At cubic.org, cubiq.org. I can't pronounce Antonio's name. There you go. Matia, sorry. But anyway, he has some really cool projects up here. Now, if you go to the iScroll 4, this is the project for this. And I actually want to show you on the phone some of the things that you can do with this. And here we go. Let's go, there we go. And let me just go bring up the browser. Do it old school. So I've got the iScroll, one of the demos up there. And if you're familiar with some of the metaphors that have carried it from iPhone over even to Android, like Android for Twitter for Android will support this kind of metaphor. I can actually pull down to refresh, and it goes and gets more things. And I don't know if it's got the bottom. Yeah, do it from the bottom. It'll do the same thing. And it's nothing really. I thought it was actually built into the iScroll library. It's not really built into the iScroll library per se, but he's got an example of how to use the iScroll library to pull off this effect. But what's going on here? I just showed you like there's the overflow hidden and stuff like that. There's just again some CSS trickery going on. Let's go look at this. Let's go load search. Because I know I've got it implemented here. There we go. And here I am actually applying the little iScroll thing. And there's, again, you can pass parameters to the object. And it's not set up so much for jQuery. There is a jQuery wrapper for it, but I've had some problems with it. Here you're just passing in the ID, and it has to be the ID of the element you want to be able to apply the scrolling effects to. And let's go look at the search page. So here I've got a little scroll wrapper over the search page, and then in here I've got an element to kind of wrap the results here, and so it ultimately comes up and does well for me. And let's go look at that. So if I go to the search page and I do Star Wars, I get some Star Wars results, and I can just scroll up and down with the mouse. He's got the mouse and the touch event supported, and he's also got inertia supported, which is one of the things that I'm still amazed people can pull off. And so you kind of see that little bounce going on there. So it's very easy to apply and a nice effect. And like I said, it's very simple to get to. Let's go back over here. One more thing with this. Let's see. Let's go to the toolbar. One more thing I want to show you here is this jump list. And I noticed the scrolling was a little broken. I wonder if I've got to fix the scroll implementation on this one. It is using the iScroll in this case, but we'll see. One of the cool things about the existing Windows Phone 7, if you don't have a Nokia and you haven't gotten updated like me, is the jump list, which is featured the full application list, which is off to the right of the home screen. And if you touch one of the letters, it pops up and has a grid of the alphabet, and it shows you where you have content and where you don't have content. And you can just tap it, and it'll go to it. Now, there is something wrong with the scroll implementation on this one. Normally, that would work just fine. And this came from a code project that I found, and I believe the person who did it was a very new to doing Ajax and JavaScript, and this was like one of his first attempts. So it was very good, but there was a lot of things that can be improved in it as far as a good jQuery type of plugin, and I've been trying to get some time to kind of maybe help him get that updated and stuff. But it's pretty neat. I believe I have the project up here, don't I? No, I don't. I'll try to tweet out the link to this later. I thought I had it up. Maybe I do up here. Yes, I do. There it is. It's Scott Logic, scottlogic.co.uk. Anyway, I thought he did a pretty good job, especially for somebody who was kind of claiming he didn't really have a lot of Ajax and jQuery experience, but it's really nice implementation of the thing there. One more thing, I'm back over here on my phone, another nice little effect. And I noticed this, the first place I noticed this kind of metaphor was on the Android. The iPhone and iPad and stuff have it as well, but the first time it actually stuck out with me was on my little Android. And so you can actually, if I might be able to just pull this down here. There we go. So I can, on the iPhone, I can pull down this like tray of stuff here. My iPhone is really not being responsive today. I believe it's completely locked up on me. Let's try this again. All right, there we go. So you get that kind of like pull down type of effect. And so Matteo, the cubic .org guy has another little project that's got the little tray things going on. I think this is pretty cool. I've implemented something very similar before I found this, or kind of along the line, about the same time I found this, to do something very similar in an application I was working on. But that's another kind of cool thing you can do. There you go. Okay. So what's another? Oh, one more thing I wanted to show on the iPhone that I've totally forgotten about. If I go back, Let's go switch over here. So this is the movie site that I've been showing you. And this is actually in the browser straight up. And if I reload this, you may be wondering how people know to add to the home screen. I showed you the touch icons and totally forgot to show you how that mechanism works, didn't I? So if you wait for it, there it is at the bottom. The cubic.org guy's got another little library that you can apply to your applications, and it will detect if it's an iPhone or an iPad, and it will pop up that little tooltip kind of reminder, or growl type of reminder, if you will, to let the people know that they could actually add this to their home screen. So it's a nice little prompt, and I've seen it used in a lot of different places. And you can actually style this the way you want to and everything. The default mechanism, this is the default out of the box. It automatically picks up on the touch icon definition, and it points right to where the user needs to do to actually go add the website to their home screen. And so if you add to the home screen, it's going to ask me to give it a name, and I'll just say demo here. So I can differentiate, and I'll add it. And you should see it pop up here in a second. Well, that was interesting. I wonder if my metronome is actually causing me problems today. I bet it added it somewhere else. One of my other panels here. Let's see. I don't know. Well, it normally adds it to this. I got the other ones on there. It could have added it to the Metroon as well. Let's go look and see. Maybe that intercepted it. I just added this Metro thing to it. Yeah, this thing is really not responsive now. Here we go. No, it didn't. Anyway, that's normally how you would add it. On the Android, I did it again. There's sort of a similar mechanism. Chrome is not supporting this, just to let you know. Let's see if I still have that going on. Actually, let's do it this way. So this is the Android 2.2.3, I think, which cannot run Chrome. I do have a Motorola Zoom with Chrome on it, and I'm actually getting very frustrated with the way it's doing the touch icons and stuff. But you can add similar things on all the Androids. You just don't get the touch icons unless you're using the traditional default Android browser. And my guess is they decided not to implement that in Chrome because of all the lawsuits about patents and things like that going on. So if I want to add this, and I'm just going to, let's just do a little demo here. First, you have to add it to your bookmark list. And let's see. There it is. Then you go select it, tap and hold, and add shortcut to home. And there it tells us it's there. So it's not quite as clean of an operation as before. I think that might be it. Let's go see. Usually it picks up on the Apple Touch icon. I don't know why it didn't this time. But anyway, so it does. That's the way you add it to the home screen on the Android. It's not quite as clean. And, of course, on Windows 8, you're just going to see a pin to start thing in the bottom toolbar, I think, off the top of my head. Let's see. Got another question here. Let's see. Your live meeting record buttons are on screen. Oh, it's not live meeting. It's the Camtasia. Don't worry about it. It's all right. Well, let's just take that out of there so I won't see it. Okay. And another thing here, if we go back, just simple page transitions. Yesterday I kind of showed you the single page application metaphor. There we go. And there we go, swap views. There we go. Go back to home. And with this one, I'm just kind of doing a swipe from the left to the right to put the new one on there. But the way I'm able to do that is, so here's my home view, and let's go touch one of these other ones. See, it moved the home view down and put the other view on top. The icons on my toolbar don't really mean anything in this particular case. So what gets rendered is the one at the top. Now, I've got a style here, and I'm not actually removing the contents in and out like I was yesterday. If I add this one, this is actually going to get displayed. But the reason why it's not is because if you look at this, I've got the current applied, which means it tells the display is inline block. And I've marked it as important so that it overrides anything that might be set like inline style or anything like that. So since this one is the one listed the lowest point in the page, that's the one that's going to get displayed. That's the way the DOM rendering CSS will work. I'm going to take this back out. We'll do that. If I put it in this one, the red one shows up. So you should get the idea there. So if we go look at the code, though, let's see if I can pull this off. There we go. We'll just look at one of these. Now, I've just got a little function, little plugin, kind of fill-in plugin called ViewSwap. And basically what's going on is I'm calling the jQuery animate method, and I'm just moving it left so it gets so it moves the current one off the screen a little bit, and then it goes and removes the class on it and adds the other one back in there. So let's see. So I could do view swap to the new view. There we go. And so if the new view is current, basically, then don't do anything. Then I'm going to pick up, just like I did with the panorama, I'm going to pick it up, and then I'm going to insert it before the current one. And then I'm going to add the class current to it. But because it's, in this particular case, for the swap, for the slide kind of deal, it's not going to be displayed because it's above the one that's currently displayed, and then I'm going to animate the one that's currently there off the screen and then remove its current class so that it's not displayed anymore. And then I'm going to reset the left position back to the original position, but because it now is not, it's got a display none set, you're not going to see it. And that's why you get the ones on the screen you actually want to see. And so I've got a little thing set up all over the place for that. There we go. So, but that basic kind of effect can be done in a lot of different ways. So I could easily just set this up so that it swipes down, swipes up, swipes left, swipes right. Yesterday I showed you how to fade in, fade out with the movies, and that's actually using a little more sophisticated thing. And so this is transitioning in and out. Now I'm actually deleting the content when it's taken out of view. And I walked through all the single page stuff yesterday, showing how to leverage local storage to keep the stuff in there for a little, for much tighter control over your memory footprint and everything, and some other experience gains. So that is a little bit about the swapping. Do I have anything left? I don't think so. That. Oh, one more thing. I usually show this early on. The tiles. A lot of people want to try to figure out how to do tiles in their applications. And basically, like I said, each one of these is set up to be inline block. And so I get that nice horizontal thing. And this is a unordered list here. I've done it with divs, I've done it with spans. So the basic concept is to get things set up to display inline. Now, the width of this particular element is fixed, and so we know where everything's going to be, or the container that every one of these items can actually sit in. And I believe we are... Wait a minute, that's the wrong one. Here we go. Same difference. Okay. Anyway, this isn't, sorry, it's not fixed, but it is fixed within the container element, which is this one. And that one is fixed. And so this actually naturally fills in that container. And then each one of these is set to display inline block. And we've got fixed heights and widths. 96 is pretty typical for a Metro standard tile. I've got some other ones where I've set it up to actually do double wides and even smaller tiles. And then you can style them however you want to. Generally, you want to make it flat for a Metro kind of feel. So that's a pretty common thing. I wanted to show you this. We're talking about Metro. just yesterday on the insiders list, I'm pretty sure I can show this off since the guy was showing off his work to us. He actually created a nice little Windows 8 kind of interface going on here. And as you can see, he's got some live tiles going on. Let's see, we've got the scrolling kind of stuff going on here. And it does actually launch stuff for us. Let's go see what happens here. Notice that transition in. He's just using some CSS to do that. And let's see, let's go back. He's also using the using a query string up there. Okay, so we're doing dashboard to take us back to that. But anyway, he's got a lot of these kind of effects going on with his little dashboard here, which is really nice. So let's see that. Oh, he's using a little plugin thing. So anyway, I just wanted to show that to you. And I think there was one other thing I wanted to show. I don't think so. I did make a bit.ly to that jump list, and this is the bit.ly here. It's capital P-I-6-X-K capital K. Again, I'll try to share all this stuff on my Twitter stream after the event, or in the Jabber room. So we're getting close to time here. I got one more question. It looks like is the add to home screen accessible from JavaScript? I wish it was. I really do. No, it's an action the user actually has to take. If I could just automatically add it to the home screen, I would. But I do see how that could be construed as a invasion of privacy, if you will. Now, if you think about it, though, if I'm going to go install an application on my iPhone or my iPad or my Androids or Windows phones, I got to go to that marketplace, I got to go to that app store, and I got to explicitly go through a bunch of steps to do that there. So the user's still kind of going through that same process to install a native application. So that's effectively what they're doing here. But you're really cutting out the middleman through a lot of those steps. Now, I showed you the little thing to pop up from the bottom to prompt and help the user get to where they need to get. But yeah, it's not something you can do with JavaScript. That was my first reaction to do that. What do you think of sites like Upsite.com that take your website and create a mobile version for you? Are they worth it for the real control? Generally, I would say no, because I'm a web developer, but I could see how a small business person would buy into stuff like this. I relate it to, I think, Yahoo stores or eBay stores and stuff like that. Probably not ultimately going to be what you really want. Let's go see what it does with my blog. Oops, we couldn't detect the platform we currently support. Oh well, so much for that, I guess. let's see, I think it's loaded.dev.com. I actually have been working on my blog, making a new blog, a very metro looking kind of thing going on here. I'm using the iScroll just for the record. And, you know, basic transitions of stuff. Let's see, and there we go. Hopefully in the next month or so I'm going to launch this, but we'll see. I'm not quite there yet. So I don't know that I would give it over to somebody like that to do my blog. All right, new question. What do I think about those? Which Chrome extensions did you use in this webcast? Sorry, I didn't use any Chrome extensions. I just use Chrome because I've been using Chrome on a project lately. That's primarily the reason why I did that. I didn't do any Chrome extensions. Let's see. And is there a good way to do offline applications like this, or does it always require persistent connection? You can use the application cache for offline applications in HTML5. And yes, you can do offline stuff. Now, if you need to get data from the internet, you're obviously not going to be able to get that. But of course, your native applications can't either, so there's no real advantage they have over you with that. You just have to learn to use stuff like local storage and IndexedDB to store your data, and have some, like for a line of business type application, have something to sync after the fact when you get back online, that kind of thing. So yeah, you can do offline applications. How do you do display HTML page in an iPhone? Well, it's with the browser. I think you may have missed early on. something I showed, which is, let's do it in this one. There we go. There it is. If you look in my headers, if you include these meta tags, you can, and it's launched from the home screen, you get that native application field, which basically means the browser Chrome suppressed, and that's how that happens. So it's a neat little trick that Apple provides us. In fact, I believe this is the way Apple recommended building applications for the iPhone initially, and then figured out they could rake in copious amounts of money by charging us 30% of everything we actually made through native apps, and so they've gone that way. So anyway. Keep trying to alt-tab back to this. Let's see. Okay. Have you found browser fragmentation a problem on Android and iOS? Seeing browsers are also apps. Opera Mini, Dolphin, Chrome, Firefox, some examples. Android's is a fragmentation problem, period. And that is problematic in and of itself. Like I just showed you, you can't get rid of the Chrome and like you can on the iPhone or Windows 8 platforms right now. There is that full screen API kind of thing. Now, as far as dealing with like layout issues and stuff, I haven't found a whole lot of problems yet. I mean, there's a few minor things here and there, but compared to doing deep dives and all the native platforms to actually do those well, I haven't seen the same kind of problems. So. But there are differences on Android between the browsers. For example, like I said, Chrome doesn't support the touch icon metaphor, whereas the default browser did. But the default browser is going away, evidently, on Android. So hopefully they'll come up with something to compete with the Apple Touch and the Pen Sight icon stuff that Windows is going to offer us. Those are some of the biggest things. When you get into some of the device APIs, that is kind of hit and miss. I haven't found a whole lot of need for a lot of the, quote, device APIs that I don't have access to yet. One that I would like to have access to right now is, like, the contacts and schedules API. I really wish somebody would just go ahead and map that in. A lot of the newer platforms will support, like, say, the file system API, I think. The newer Androids and the Windows 8 supports media capture. So that means you can actually hook in your camera and stream videos and stuff if you want to, which is pretty cool. So as far as device stuff, one of the things I say to people, especially when it comes to an enterprise application, is do you think you're going to have to shake your phone to make your line of business application work? And I've never had anybody say yes. So that's a good litmus test, I think. Now, if they want to actually use a camera, for example, I was talking to an insurance company a few months ago, and they needed to take pictures of things they insured for, you know, damage estimates and things like that. That is going to be a little problem for now. I anticipate in the next year or so that's going to start fading away, and you're going to be able to start, like I said, using that media capture API to do things like that. So I think that's the last question. Again, I'm going to tweet out some of these links. After the session here, or get them on Jabber, feel free to ping me if you want to. I do follow my Twitter stream quite frequently, and I'm very active on Twitter. So that's best way to interact with me. It's great because I can also kind of broadcast it at that point, the responses and stuff. But my blog, professionalaspnet.com, and feel free to check that out and leave comments if you want, and everything. It's great to talk to you, and hopefully having book recommendations. I do have some book recommendations. Since we're short on time, I'm gonna refer you to my blog. I do have some books that I've referenced on my blog. There's a mobile design patterns UI book that I like. Luke Roboborski, which I never say his name, LukeW.com. He's got some books out there, mobile first in particular. I highly recommend that book right now too. Nothing per se on mobile web. Well, actually, there is one. It is a, I want to say it's an A-Press book. Let me bring up my Kindle real quick. Come on, there we go. So I can see it's, I'm trying to think what it is. It's either A-Press or Packet T. I can't remember which. I'll tell you here in a second. It's a Beginning iPhone and iPad Web Apps is the title of the book. And it looks like it, if I hit the right thing here. It's an A-Press book, Beginning iPhone and iPad Web Apps. I found it to be a very good one, too. Okay, next question. Is there a way to browse photos on the phone? No. Through a file upload control, give a session. Oh, thank you. I don't know. That's one of those things I've got on my list to kind of check out, is if the file upload would let me access the photos and stuff. I can't say definitively, but that was a question I had about 3 weeks ago, but I haven't had enough time to go investigate. Maybe in the next month or so I will, but I would love to be able to do that. So, great question. Great questions from all of you. All right, one more. Let's see. My Twitter is Chris Love, at Chris Love. Do you have any insight on how easy it will be for applications developed for cross-browser compatibility to easily port to a Metro? I do not. WinRT and WinJS are kind of different. WinRT is really aimed, I think, more at the XAML crowd, and the WinJS is aimed at the web crowd. So WinJS, yes, I use Modernizer, period. Yes, everything I do, I have Modernizer at the top. So, yeah, my bigger question is getting the Metro out of WinJS into the web, and that's why you see things like this droptiles.com in the back and some of the stuff that I've been working on to try to apply Metro concepts to this stuff. And a lot of it's because, I mean, Metro is just really designed as a touch-first mobile interface. Let's see. Yes, WinJS sits on top of WinRT. I know that. Yes. John Lamb is one of the guys who's kind of responsible for mapping WinJS into the WinRT stuff. Yes. So, but the WinJS is all executed with HTML, CSS3, and AJAX instead of XAML. All right, so that should be all the questions, and we are right up against the next presentation.